Cool, blimey, Governor, it's nearly March.
Oh, don't say that. I don't feel we've stopped in 2020.
I know, it's an express train to soberhood, and you are at the helm of this ship.
Oh, no, you can't have an express train and then use a ship analogy, Vinny.
Lots of metaphors in there, aren't there?
I apologise.
This is the Club Soda monthly podcast, which will slowly make more sense than that. I am joined by the founder, one of them, of Club Soda, Laura. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. We are pushing into March and I feel like Dry Jan's just behind us. But
Dry Jan's away, but Sober Spring's ahead of us and people are beginning to think about, you know, particularly if you've done Dry January and you were trying to moderate, then during February, you'll have some idea on how that's going. And some people are going, oh, you know, I'm not quite sure. Or now they want to take another sober sprint or even want to, you know, as the weather improves and want to get out there a little bit more, people are beginning to think about whether they want to change their drinking habits. But we're here all year round, not just at Dry January. That's the important thing.
And you don't necessarily have to listen to any of these episodes in chronological order. There's helpful tips and advice in every single one of them, as well as recipes and all kinds of stuff. Speaking of which, what's coming up on this March
podcast? First of all, we've got some news about pubs and bars that are now on the Club Soda Guide, and we will share some news about what we've been doing to persuade pubs to stock more, but you'll hear more about that later. We've got an interview with Wise Bartender, who's one of the online shops that can provide you with alcohol-free drinks, and a wonderful interview with Steve Livins from the British Beer and Pub Association. He's an expert on all things beer, and we talked a little bit about the health benefits of alcohol-free beer. We have an interview with Ruby Warrington, who some of you will know wrote the book Sober Curious. I met her in New York this week. And we've got some canny advice from Beth, who I was on radio with before Christmas, about how she tackles social situations without drinking.
Club Soda events.
First of all, some of you may have heard, we've got a social on Barry Island on March the 14th. So have a look at that if you're in that area or want a day out. Then there are a few people running events, like a relaxation day in Finton in Essex. It's being run by Soberlicious. And they're also running a social in Ruislip. The Sober Experiment, the girls from Manchester on tour, and they're doing an event in Redemption on March the 28th. And then you'll also see that there's Eleanor Conway, who did a really good comedy show about getting sober a few years ago, is now back on tour with her show called You May Have Seen Me on Tinder. And she's going to be talking a lot about her dating experiences, but particularly about her sober dating experiences. And so you can see her events on our website, and she's around the country doing that show over the next few months.
Have you seen it yourself?
I haven't seen this one, but I did see the last one several times. I really enjoyed it. There's a Soberlicious Supper Club in Leeds on April the 4th, and the Alcohol-Free Comedy Club is back at Fugitive Motel on April the 5th. And on April the 18th, we've got our next coaching day with Stephanie Chivers. So if you want to put aside a day to change your drinking habits, our next one's in Bristol on April the 18th from 10:30 to 4 p.m. Do come along. It's only £65 for the day, and you will get an amazing day to give you all the tools you need to change your drinking. There will undoubtedly be more events that people are adding to our website. As you know, we bring together anyone who's doing events in this space and let them advertise on joinclubsoda.com/events so that you can find anything near you that you want to go to.
joinclubsoda.com/events. So what do we have on the table this month?
Well, I've brought some drinks in, as always. I've got something here called Highball. They're a pre-made cocktail. They do a number of different flavours. But I thought the pink gin would suit you, Vinny.
Don't mind if I do.
Do you want to give that an open? And I've got the classic G&T. You know, you can buy the botanicals and then put a mix on them. So those big bottles of things like cedars and atopia that you can get in the supermarket. And you heard Caliano last month. Well, these are pre-bottled, so this is bottled already with the mixer in. So actually, if you're going on a picnic or something like that, that'd be perfect. Or for some pubs, it's a lot easier than having one of the big bottles behind the bar. They might want to put some of these in the fridge and chill them down, and so you can just drink it as is.
Cheers.
I've got the classic G&T. They're only 55 calories a bottle.
Oh, that sounds good already. I've got a pink G&T, which means it's got raspberry, juniper and botanicals. The design's wicked.
Yeah, and for me, for the alcohol-free gins, things that talk about being a gin, it's that getting that junipery taste. And Actually, this is really lovely.
And this is really, really alcohol-free. This is zero.
Yeah, zero percent. There, 0 to 0.5% is alcohol-free. But that is very beautiful. I'm very excited by that.
Oh, I can live with this as well. That's really nice.
I can see you with a nice pink gin and an umbrella on an evening out, Vinnie.
It's I'm not very good at this, but I'll do my best. It's refreshing, mild, delicate, with a cheeky little twist.
Oh, get you. Anyway, these drinks are very helpful on an evening out, and the more pubs and bars that are going to stock them, the better. We'll talk a bit more about that later. But first of all, I met Beth, who's actually been a friend of mine for ages. She used to share an office with us. But she then has gone to work somewhere else. And then I ended up doing a Radio 5 interview with her before Christmas. And she talked about something on that interview that I wanted to capture for you as an audience. So here's the interview I did with her straight after the very irrelevant and incidental one that she did with Radio 5 Live. I'm here with Beth. Some of you may have heard me with Beth on Radio 5 Live in December, on December the 12th, in fact, where she posed the question about losing friendships or navigating friendships when you're sober. But you talked very curiously about when you first gave up, about having a sort of a playlist in your head of excuses. And I want to know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So not necessarily a playlist, a playbook.
Oh, yeah, that
so
was
like
it.
A guide. Yeah, a guide that I sort of wrote for myself about how to navigate different social situations and how to just sort of cope with being teetotal in a world that was just not quite set up for that yet. Particularly being at university. So I come up with a bunch of different strategies ranging from stuff like, so if I take like a house party as an example, some of the things that I would do to navigate a house party, everyone knows that you turn up to a house party late. Whatever time I expected people to turn up, I would turn up half an hour later than that so that people would have had their first, maybe second drink and everyone would feel kind of loosened up. I found that one of the hardest things about giving up alcohol was that awkward first touch point at a social situation where everyone's feeling, you know, that maybe you don't know everyone so well, everyone's a little bit awkward, and that first drink really just sort of lubricates the evening. So I would make sure to arrive after that point to a house party. I would also I would also take my own drinks pretty much everywhere, even into bars. Endearingly, some people used to say I'd carry Iron Brew about with me. It was my favourite drink, my drink of choice. This was way before I'd stumbled upon club soda and heard that there were actual soft drinks that weren't going to destroy my teeth and give me a sugar hangover. So, take my own drinks everywhere. I had a bunch of different playlists that I would listen to on the way to events to get me really sort of pumped up, almost kind of replicating that feeling of inhibition or energy that I used to get from drinking. Then there was a whole different kind of set of rules when you were actually in a bar or in a club. Never get involved in a round. Never. Because people won't buy your, you know, people are quite happy now to include my soda water in the round, but you don't want them to know, you know, when you've first given up alcohol. So I would always go to the bar by myself. I would ask bartenders to make it look like I was drinking a cocktail. That's something I'm particularly embarrassed about now. The number of leaves that used to go in my lemonade. Asking them to make it look like a gin and tonic with a little slice of lime. And I used to make sure that I always had a bottle or a glass or something in my hand so that people just wouldn't ask me that question that I was so anxious about. Oh, are you not drinking? Why are you not drinking?
So how long have you been not drinking now?
It's almost 5 years now. So it was the middle of 2015 when I stopped drinking.
And do you need any of those excuses anymore?
No, I'm very fortunate in the past couple of years. I feel very, not only confident, but confident in my decision, but confident in communicating that decision. I can now walk into a room or talk to new people and very comfortably say, I don't drink. And actually, quite often people don't ask why, but if they do, I also feel confident in saying, it's just not quite right for me. I do it for health reasons. I feel better. I still have a great time. That's where we are now.
So that playbook doesn't last forever?
It doesn't last forever, no. But it is very useful when you're starting out.
that was a lovely Beth talking about how she navigates evenings out with friends. Another way you can navigate an evening out is by going to clubsodaguide.com, which is our listing of all the best low and no drinks and which venues have them in stock. I've got with me Jessie, who's our guide manager, to talk to us a little bit more about the guide and what's new. So are there any new venues on the guide this month?
Yeah, we've got some great new venues added to the guide this month. We've got a selection of copper clubs, which are bars and restaurants across London and the South West. They've got some fantastic options there, including some really nice mocktail coolers and some great big drop beers as well.
And then what about drinks? Are there any new drinks on the guide this month? We basically keep the most up-to-date list of alcohol-free drinks that you could possibly get. We need that on there so that venues can tag which drinks they've got behind the bar, but it means that you can also find them. You can also find them where you can buy them online in places like Wise Bartender, Dry Drinker and the supermarket. So anything new this month?
Yeah, there's been some really exciting new things going up on the guide. First of all, we've got Thatcher Zero, which is a new cider that's just come up.
From the West Country, hooray!
And seems to be going down very well. We've also had some exciting new kind of craft beers being added to the guide, including the London Fields Passion Fruit Sour, which tastes delicious, and some more esoteric European options, including from breweries like Tuel and Lervig.
Oh, very exotic and very exciting as well. I mean, the guide is a work in progress for us at Club Soda. It's definitely a very much a big passion project. And our aim is to not only get as many venues up there by talking to them ourselves, but also for you to do that. How can people make sure that if they find a great venue, they can get it on the guide?
So first of all, you can go on the guide website and nominate a great venue near you. Really simple form. Just give us some details about where it is and what they stock, and we'll work to get that added up. And you can also find out about our Sober Hack Packs, which are basically little packs where you can leave a venue that's done really well a card saying, thank you for helping me have a great time when I'm not drinking alcohol. And that gives the venue details about how they can join the Club Soda Guide themselves.
And you can get those on joinclubsoda.com in the shop and leave us a donation and we'll send you one, which is one of the ways that we can populate the guide. Another way we've been trying to influence what pubs and bars stock is to go to trade shows. And we did something massive recently. In fact, it was very, very tiring. But we went to the UK's biggest pub trade show called Pub 20. And we created our own pop-up alcohol-free bar with over 50 brands? How many were on there?
Over 50 brands.
Over 50 brands on the bar for pubs and bars to try and lots of talks. Do you want to tell us a bit more about how that went, Jessie, and about the talks?
So basically, we were looking to create one of the most exciting low and no alcohol bar spaces that's ever been done before. And we curated a selection of talks from some amazing brands like Nine Elms, Celtic Soul, Calibri, Heineken, Square Root and Mocktails, all looking at the really exciting opportunities there are in the low and no space. So we heard about pairing non-alcoholic wines with food, how pubs can upgrade their soft drinks to much more exciting options, and the future of stuff like CBD, all while serving people samples of all these amazing low and no alcohol products. We were showing pubs how they can totally change their menus, and we really opened some eyes, I think.
And it was absolutely buzzing. We were the busiest space in the whole of the show. We took one of the biggest spaces, which, as you know, we're a very small organisation. It's very scary. You know, we had a space as big as Fevertree, and they're a very big company. But more importantly, it was a beautifully designed space. Some great people from Happy Place helped design this beautiful space and got loaned to us amazing light fittings and furniture that meant we basically popped up a bar that you'd love to come to. So it was awesome. So what we've got now is a little bit of a snip of the clips from some of the venues that we put onto a panel where they were sharing their advice on how to integrate low and no into your offer if you run a pub or bar.
We've got Liam Davey, who's head of bars at Hawksmoor. Thank you for spending some time with us. Then we've got James Bolton, head of category at Mitchell & Butler. We've Dana is from The Understudy, which has really been smashing this category, really. You've definitely done well over January. It's been all over social media. Next, we've got David from Fugitive Motel. If you've not been to Fugitive Motel yet, they have the most stonking range of low and no, which he will tell you a little bit more about. And then we've got Paul. Actually, Paul was also one of the first venues on the Club Soda Guide with his cocktail bars. And it's obviously that experience is also leading him into developing a product. Why even bother putting low on no one? Why did you even go there?
Consumer behaviour has changed, and we came at it that just to have a bottle of, you know, one bottle of alcohol-free beer in the bottom of the fridge, or one, you know, one alcohol-free wine option, just wasn't enough, and isn't enough instead of changing consumer demands, for sure.
But Michelin butlers, you're everywhere. Why is that important for you?
I think increasingly, you know, we're trying to make sure our pubs operate across all of the occasionalities through the day. They've got to be all day places to be. They can't just be about Friday and Saturday night. The way that people use our businesses has changed. We have to offer drinks in the same way that coffee has become a big thing in pubs. We need to offer a broad range of non-alcoholic drinks that people actually want to buy. You know, sometimes you've really got to make a statement by having more than you actually need, or more than you think you're going to get the throughputs for. You've got to make a statement.
Zana, why did you start at the understudy looking at low and no?
I think for us, being the venue that we are, we obviously cater to a large theatre crowd, but we have an awful lot of just tourist footfall, passers-by. We have some destination customers, so our customer base is incredibly wide-ranging. What people are looking for is going to vary day-to-day, hour-to-hour. So for me, it's really kind of about accessibility, inclusivity, which I know are words that we throw around a lot, but it's something that, for obvious reasons, the National Theatre is huge on anyway. And it was really one of those things that once you got the first couple of beers in the fridges and saw how they went and saw the reaction to it from customers, you know, all the things that we were maybe a little bit trepidatious about, the price point, the reaction to maybe the flavour profile not being quite right, those fears got alleviated very, very quickly. And I think we realised that there was, no doubt about the fact that there was a market for that. And for me, it's a bit of a no-brainer. If stuff's selling and it's making people feel like our space is more inclusive, more welcoming, then why would we stop doing that?
So, Paul, you're in the lovely cocktail space, and you know, you saw this quite a while ago. What did you start doing before you could put your own product on the menu?
Yeah, you say that. I still think we were probably quite slow compared to what consumers were asking for in our venues. I think traditionally bartenders have been quite slow to embrace no-lo, when actually consumers are probably on board more than we are. So we had a no-lo menu probably about 5 years ago now, and it's always sold very well. January is actually one of our busier months of the year, and this year January was the busiest January we've ever had in two of our venues. So I certainly think Dry January is an indication of quite how successful this category is, and it's great for us. But we, like Hawksmoor, make a lot of our own ingredients, so we'd started off using our own ingredients in non-alcoholic cocktails. But for me, two things were missing from those. One was texture. So an important part of what we work with as bartenders is texture. So one thing I wanted to do with Everleaf was to develop something that had texture and mouthfeel. The other part of what I felt was missing was the story behind the ingredients. So a lot of what we sell as bartenders is the story behind the brands we work with. And making your own cucumber water doesn't have a glamorous story to it. I wanted to use my background to really talk about the story of the ingredients and how I got there. I'm a conservation biologist by background, so talking about how the ingredients get into the bottle, what we do with them, what the roles they play, tell stories to consumers. So going back to your question, I feel like as bartenders we were slow to embrace no-lo because we had a lot of stories on the back bar we wanted to tell. We wanted to talk about the single barrel cask strength whiskey. We wanted to talk about all the botanicals in the gin from up the road. And we didn't really have that with non-alcoholic products. We had fruit juice and tonic and things like that. So Everleaf, I really wanted an elaborate story so our bartenders were able to kind of really engage consumers. Because what we found from our guests is they want stories, they want experiences, they want great drinks that look beautiful, that taste complex, that are their own little creations.
You are listening to me. My name's Vinny, and I'm having a chat with one of the founders of the amazing movement that is Club Soda. Join clubsoda.com for more information. Laura, We have been drinking our way through the afternoon here in the studio. I've already had the pink G and T.
I'm going to keep you on the pink theme, and I'm going to give you an alcohol-free wine. And you've got the pink one, the rosé one. It's called Vintensi, and it's come from a company that's bringing a lot of wines here into the UK. And I particularly like it because it's in a single-serve bottle. And some of you will know that once you're not drinking alcohol, you don't necessarily want to drink the whole bottle of wine, apparently. Who knew? You know, once I opened a whole bottle, I wouldn't want to stop. But actually, with an alcohol-free, you probably want one glass with your meal, and that's perfectly fine. And that's sometimes what stops pubs and bars stocking an alcohol-free wine, because they don't want to open a whole bottle of wine to then have no customer who doesn't want it for the next few days and have to throw it away.
Yeah.
So these come in single-serve bottles. So I'm just pouring you the lovely pink one.
Oh, it's a lovely bottle. It's a glass version of what you might get on a plane. It's that sort of size.
And I've got the white one, and it's a slightly sparkling. Give it a go. Oh, I lied. It's not a sparkling. It's a still wine.
One sparkling. Either that or it's gone off. It's lovely.
Oh, yours is sparkly.
Yeah. Actually, it's really good. I was really worried that it wasn't going to be dry. I like dry wines particularly.
Yeah, I think for me, this is still slightly too sweet, because I'm definitely on a very dry
Have a
palate.
Crack at my one. I think you'll like that. My Maslobber.
Oh yes, yours is sparkling and mine is still. So, but it's really nice. I would not be unhappy with getting that with my meal on an evening out.
Mm.
Go particularly well with fish, and yeah, it's a really nice alcohol-free wine. Now, if you're not sure where to get all of these things, because obviously the supermarkets have some, and their range is getting bigger all the time. But our tastes are all very varied, actually. So, like I said, I go for very dry tastes and a very dry palate. Even when it comes to alcohol-free cider, I'm looking for something that's very dry rather than a fruit cider. And so we've all got different tastes, and there's definitely a load out there to explore. One place that you can buy those is, well, it's actually two really good places, drydrinker.com and wisebartender.com. And I went down the other day to meet Wise Bartender. There's a little video on the blog that goes with this of the massive warehouse of alcohol-free drinks that he's got, to have a look at the range that he has and why he set up Wise Bartender.
I'm sat here in the Cozy Club in Salisbury with Tom from Wise Bartender. Tom, tell me what Wise Bartender is.
Hiya. Yeah, thank you for having me along to talk to. So Wise Bartender, we're an online alcohol-free store. So you can find us at wisebartender.co.uk. We launched a couple of years ago. Since then, we have grown to over... we're nearly 250 alcohol-free drinks available to buy online.
Why the hell, when Tesco's stick in a really, really big alcohol-free section, do you think it's a good idea to start selling alcohol-free drinks online? Surely the days of needing to do that are gone, right?
Not quite. So a couple of years ago, the offer in Tesco and any other sort of supermarket wasn't quite as good. And when I looked around online, you can only buy the alcohol-free drinks in cases. And I wanted to try some individual bottles, and so that was quite prohibitive and not accessible to me. So hence we started Wise Bartender. The supermarkets have a fantastic offering, and it's a great place to, you know, to start a journey. But if you find a particular drink or particular style and you want to look a little bit deeper, there's so much more available out there. So we've got nearly 250 drinks. There's so many more worldwide. There's literally thousands worldwide. So kind of our aim is to try and bring as many to you to try as possible.
So tell me a little bit more about your own drinking habits and what led you to even want to try and buy an individual bottle of alcohol-free beer online.
So my background is public health, and I also, a couple of years ago, was starting to try to get a little bit fitter, doing triathlons, and I discovered Erdinger alcohol-free. So that's got isotonic qualities, so it's great for recovery after sport. Really enjoyed the Erdinger, and I wanted to find some more drinks. And like I said, you know, the supermarkets that time didn't have a great offering, and I wanted to just try a few bottles here and there, and I struggled to do that. Alcohol-free needs to be made accessible, because it's very new to a lot of people. So until we get to that point where it's completely mainstream, I think we're always going to need a service that brings drinks to as close to people as we can get.
What's your best triathlon?
Best triathlon? Well, I have done an Ironman.
How long did that take?
14 and a half hours. I was hoping for a little bit quicker, but I ran out of Erdinger.
Have you another sporting challenge on the way?
No, so I love sporting challenges, but White Spartan has taken my life a little bit at the moment. So the reason I was doing it is the reason I'm not doing sport at the moment, which is a little bit of a bit of an oxymoron. Although, funny enough, I was having a conversation with a friend this week about possibly cycling around Wiltshire. So that would be about 150 miles. So that might be something that I take on if I can get some time to get on the bike.
You could do all your deliveries by bike. Win-win. Because you've gone out and done events as well. You've probably been the first person to take an alcohol-free stand to some of the food and drink events in the Southwest. And people often complain to me that they go to these events and there's, you know, there's events that people have to drive to, like the Bath and West show and stuff like that, and they've never normally had alcohol-free. How have you find those? What's the reception been like?
Yeah, so like I said, the ethos of White Bartender is trying to make drinks as accessible as possible. And like, you're absolutely right. You know, there's only so much you can get from looking at an image on a website or reading a bit of text. You need to try these drinks. And so we get to as many events as we can. Like I said, just like the Bath and West Festival, like the Eat Festivals, which is a fantastic food festival going around Somerset, to make these drinks accessible. We pick brands, we speak to the brands before each event that we think pairs well with it. And we try and make it a bit of an exciting journey. So, you know, if they're trying great tastes of that region, you know, some great food, so let's take some drinks along that pair with it that aren't alcohol-free. Sorry, that are alcohol-free, so they can drive home.
You've got to get that the right way around. And have you got any particular favourites that you've got in stock at the minute? I've been around your warehouse. It's absolutely crammed full. Is it like just, do you call it your outdoor larder? That's what I used to call the local off licence. What is it that you would pick up from your selection right now that you're really enjoying?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic to have there. And every time I'm kind of in there doing something, I just pick up a bottle every now and then and crack it open and just enjoy it. Because having so many drinks, you kind of forget what you've got there sometimes. At the moment, I've kind of been enjoying some of the sour beers and the new table beer style we're seeing. So like the Binary Botanical, quite enjoyed that recently. Some of the Mikkola beers that are coming over from Denmark, they're really great. But there's also like lots of long-standing favourites, I guess. Like, I really enjoy an IPA, and I firmly believe the IPA category with alcohol-free is as good, if not better, than the alcoholic offerings. In fact, just before Christmas, you know, I'm a mindful drinker, but I had an alcoholic IPA on tap, and I actually was a little bit disappointed. So I kind of went home, and I think I cracked open a Cypher Brew to kind of satisfy my craving for a decent IPA that night.
And what about in the spirits? And being as we're in the West Country, are there any decent ciders?
The cider category, I think, is going to boom a little bit this year. That's kind of one of my tips. There's space for a few more ciders definitely out there. We've just taken on Thatcher Zero. It's become a little bit drier than some of the other ciders. So I guess what we've seen with the ciders, they've started off quite sweet, and kind of each version that comes out is a little bit drier. So depending how you like your ciders, there's definitely more availability out there. Spirits, that's another booming area at the moment. I think on the whole market, it's close to sort of 50 different spirits out there. And I think we've got between 20 and 30 at the moment. You know, you've got the classics like Seedlip, which continue to perform well. But being in the Southwest as well, I really enjoy the Sea Arch, and it makes a great C&T with tonic.
And where can people find you, Tom?
That's a great question. So
one that I nearly forgot to ask.
So wisebartender.co.uk, and don't forget, for Club Soda members, there's a promo code. So Club Soda VIP gets you 5% off.
Fantastic, thank you.
That was Tom from Wise Bartender. I've used Wise Bartender, Laura.
Did you use your discount code, Club Soda VIP?
Yeah, I did. I got, what did I get? 5%.
5% off.
Yeah, which helped. As you know, I have an obsession with the Big Drop Milk Stout. I absolutely love it. It's won awards regardless of the fact that it's non-alcoholic. And
yeah,
when you try it, you'll realise
why. It won the World Beer Awards against full strength beers in a blind taste test.
If you used to like Guinness or a London Porter, then... I can't help advertising. I just love it. But yeah, I buy that off Wise Bartender. And yeah, they've been a good service so far. They're not the only one though, are they?
No, there's Dry Drinker, and then there's a few others popping up. And of course, you can also buy online from Ocado and from all the supermarkets as well. So don't think you have to lug a really heavy bag through town when you're going and shopping for drinks. You could do a monthly order of some of the drinks there as well. But definitely for those two online shops, it's about giving you a range that goes beyond what's available in the supermarket. And you can try all sorts of different styles of beers and wines and alcohol-free drinks. And I think that's the interesting part of it, and create mixed boxes and get them sent to your home.
What's happened in the last few years, particularly in the world of non-alcoholic beer?
Well, I always say that alcohol-free beer is one of the healthiest things you can drink in the pub next to water, because it's full of lovely vitamins and there tends to be no sugar in it and it's very low in calories. But I'm never sure if people believe me when I tell them that. So recently I met up with Steve Livins. Now, he's a beer sommelier and he's also in charge of beer and health at the Beer and Pub Association. And so I had a chat to him about how healthy alcohol-free beer is.
We are a trade association. We represent the UK brewing and pub sectors, and we do a whole range of things. One of the things I focus on specifically is looking at beer and the diversity in beer, the different types and styles that are available, and particularly the benefits of moderate consumption. And part of that at the moment is really the sheer extent and diversity of the low alcohol, alcohol-free part of the market, which is absolutely vast.
It is, and you've been very helpful in getting venues to sign up to our guide and giving us advice about beer, actually. I never thought I'd learn so much about tap lines after speaking to you, these things that you never expect to hear. I thought I'd talk to you today a little bit about the health benefits of beer, because you're an expert in this, and whilst there's health benefits to alcoholic beer, there are lots of health benefits to alcohol-free beer as well. What are they?
I think the important thing to remember is that alcohol-free beer is, in many cases, exactly the same as a standard strength beer. It's just not got the alcohol in it.
So you're less likely to fall over and eat a kebab on the way home?
Less likely to fall over and eat a kebab on the way home. So there's lots of those kind of associated benefits alongside. But what it means is that all of that nutritional content, all that nutritional benefit that you get from natural ingredients, particularly the cereals, but also the hops, the yeast and the fermentation process itself, is all locked in. It's all still there.
And so what are those, though?
It's a huge range of vitamins and minerals, particularly B vitamins. There's a lot of B vitamins. There's a lot of fiber. There's a lot of functional minerals there that do all sorts of benefits. Interestingly, beer makes a great recovery drink when you're doing intensive exercise. So if you've been marathon running, for instance, running is a big one. You use up a lot of energy.
Yeah, so those people who get their Erding at alcohol-free at the end of the marathon and sports events. Yeah. It could be any beer. It doesn't have to be Erdinger.
No, any alcohol-free beer works exactly the same way. The only thing it lacks is salt, which is where the pub comes in, because if you have a bowl of pretzels or a little bowl of nuts alongside it, you get all the salt content you need.
There you are. There's a square meal, an alcohol-free beer and a bowl of nuts. I like it.
Perfect combination.
But is it also rehydrating then after a run?
Absolutely. I mean, it is equally or better in terms of rehydration potential to water, essentially, because of the mineral content. You find that rehydration potential for beer is very, very high.
And the B vitamins are quite high. I mean, if anyone like me is a Marmite fan, then you'll know that that's a byproduct of the brewing process and is stacked full of B12. So that B12 is also in the beer?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes through in the beer right the way through. As you say, some of it a byproduct of fermentation, some of it comes through from the cereals in the first place.
And I guess all of that's jam-packed into alcohol-free beer as well, but you don't. Alcohol can damage your absorption rate of vitamins in your stomach. So the fact there's no alcohol in there means that you're more likely to absorb those vitamins from the beer.
Yeah, the alcohol can get in the way of the absorption rate for a number of different reasons in the end, and some vitamins in particular it can slow that process down. On that basis, without the alcohol there at all, you're maximising the bioavailability of these nutrients within the beer itself.
So basically, all round, it's a healthy product. But the other thing that people always say to me is, oh, all the alcohol-free drinks are all stacked full of sugar. But that's not the case for beer, right?
No, and in particular for the alcohol-free beers and the way that they're made. If you think about it, the purpose of brewing is to essentially create alcohol through that fermentation process. So the way to do that is to generate a bit of sugar for the yeast to use during fermentation. When we make an alcohol-free beer, we go through that full fermentation process. We just then take away all of the alcohol at the end. So the sugar content is typically lower. It's certainly no more than you would find in a standard beer.
Yeah, and I think out of all of the alcohol-free products, beer is that lower sugar one. It is lowest in sugar.
Yeah.
I like to tell people that next to water is probably the healthiest thing you can drink in the pub is an alcohol-free beer.
Absolutely. I'd agree, definitely.
Three ingredients, no added sugar, around 60 calories a bottle. Yep. Boom, job done.
Definitely.
So definitely in terms of thinking about, I mean, for me, it's really interesting because I never drank beer when I was drinking alcohol. I was a scrumpy cider girl. But I now drink beer for a couple of reasons. One is because it's healthier. And the second is because it's not a taste that I am used to glugging, shows you where my drinking habits were, it is actually something I sip a lot more. And so therefore it lasts me a lot longer. So that's why I think it fits in very well. And so definitely give it a go. If you think that you learnt to like alcohol generally, you can learn and attune your taste buds to other types of drinks, including beer. Are there any favourite beers for you, Steve?
I am a big fan of pale ales. I love pale ales. And from the alcohol-free sort of sector, that's actually an increasing platform. We're seeing so many more of these pale ale-type beers coming through, as well as lagers too. I have to say, I think Adnams Goat Ship is an absolutely fantastic example of that, but Nirvana too. Nirvana makes some really, really lovely pale ales, and they have a fantastic balance of flavour. And that, for me, is very important in beer because, as you say, there are those three ingredients. Once you get into a situation where you have balance and you get the contribution equally from those different ingredients, it's a product that sings at that stage.
Yeah, and Drop Bear is Wales' only pale ale. They have one.
Yep.
And you know you can get Big Drop Pale Ale with your milk from Milk and More. They do it in the milk delivery. My mum gets so excited. She keeps sending me a photo every time she gets a delivery in the morning.
That's fantastic.
Two bottles of milk and two pale ales from Big Drop. It's hilarious. So there you are. You can get it with your milk. So that's really good. And I think people need to explore and going for mixed cases from Wise Bartender or Dry Drinker is a great way to begin to explore beers. There's such a range that even if you were never really a beer drinker, there'd be something that fits that mould for you. And I've been really interested that there's such a wide spectrum of taste that there's definitely lots that I like, and I never thought that was possible.
No, and we've always talked about beer in that sense. It's one of these products where there is, quite frankly, such a diverse range of flavours and characteristics because of the different mix of styles, because of the colours, the different forms of ingredient that we use. I mean, if you think about it in terms of just the ingredient mix compared to wine, where you essentially have one ingredient, well, you know, for beer we have three, and that exponentially leads to a range more flavours. The use of hops from around the world, where you have different characteristics from different parts of the world, which will provide you with different ranges of aromas and flavours too. So, you know, there truly is a beer for all tastes at the end
of
the day.
And then there's other products that are sort of in that space, like Binary Botanicals uses different parts of the hops in order to make a beer-like drink, but a lot lighter with food. And in the States, in the health food shops at the minute, you can get lots of hop sodas.
Yeah.
I think the only equivalent we've got here so far is Cloudwater soda. Will you be taking an interest in those hop sodas as they come through, do you think?
I don't know.
Do I need to persuade you?
I'd be interested to see them.
Yeah,
I know this is a big trend. This is a growing trend. We're starting to see it, I think, coming into the UK. In the US, it's been quite big, and you know, I mean, if you look at the sort of healthy brewed botanical drinks, I think the Edwardians made a big thing of this because ginger beers and these kind of naturally brewed botanicals at one time were a very, very popular thing, and you're starting to see them kind of getting popular again now.
Yeah, I really like the hop sodas because the hops brings down that sweetness, and then they're often using tea as well as a base, and actually it's a beautiful combination. And if anyone knows me, they know what a tea geek I am, but it does create some amazing tannins and flavours, and I'm really excited that brewers in the UK might start looking at those sort of hop soda type things.
I think you have to. I mean, if you're looking at creating certain styles and looking at creating alcohol-free beers in particular, when you remove the alcohol, you remove a fairly large chunk of the flavour aspect of the beer, which you then have to replace with something. And actually, that's where I think the sort of opportunity for innovation is. So I think you were telling me the other day about a kombucha mixed beer, which is quite a sour sort of...
Yeah, Nirvana do a kombucha mixed beer. An amazing innovation and really interesting, and I hope at the beginning of some experimenting around that space. But also Square Root are doing their collaboration sodas. So they're picking really amazing seasonal fruits and adding other ingredients alongside, you know, some of our craft brewers and creating some beautiful shandies. And we've never taken shandies to shandies in this country, that the Radlers, but these are different again, and I think it'd be great if as a sector we could embrace the shandy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at other parts of the world, other sort of beer brewing nations of the world, particularly if you take Radlers as an example, a drink that was defined for cyclists, a lower strength drink that was intended to be drunk by people that were doing exercise.
Either diluting your alcoholic beer with a craft soda will bring down the ABV, or you can make a great shandy with a beer base and still have it at 0.5. Yep. Or if you end up in a pub that might only have Beck's Blue and you're not sure about Beck's Blue, I like to make what you call a posh and Beck's, where you get a craft soda and make a pint with a lager, an alcohol-free lager and a soda. So again, if beer isn't quite your taste, but you don't want a whole pint of something sweet and sickly, an alcohol-free beer with a craft soda creates a brilliant make your own shandy.
Better than a porn star martini.
Well, I don't know. I never drank those. That's just you. Thanks so much for your time today, Steve.
Absolute pleasure.
So, Vinny, you do several dry months a year, and then you try and moderate the rest of the year? Is that your... How would you describe yourself?
How many are several?
Well... I don't know, how would you describe yourself? Are you...
I don't know if we could say that I do several. I do, at the very minimum, Sober October. I like to do... Next year I'll be doing Dry Jan. I didn't do it this year because I was on my holidays. Which is an interesting form of language I've come to recognise as not particularly healthy. We could look at that another time. But yeah, I do at least a month off, usually two, and then I always have non-alcoholic beer in the fridge. So midweek, if I fancy a beer, I'll try and be a good boy there.
So you may be what some people call sober curious, which is a phrase that's being used a lot alongside mindful drinking now, and has come from our friend Ruby, who's a British journalist who lives in the United States, who lives in New York. But she wrote a book last year called Sober Curious, which is a fantastic book. But I thought I'd catch up with her and talk a little bit about what she's been doing and also about this changing language that is giving us more ways to describe ourselves. So have a listen to this interview. And in the meantime, Vinny, you can think about how you'd like to describe yourself as a mindful drinker.
The interview.
I'm here with Ruby Warrington. Some of you may know Ruby as the author of Sober Curious. Say hi, Ruby.
Hi, everybody.
Ruby's just run a weekend retreat. Where did you run it? Tell us a bit more about it.
It's at a place called Kripalu in Massachusetts, which is about two... It's the state kind of above Connecticut, which is above New York, which sounds quite far away, but it's only about a 2.5-hour train ride away from New York, where I live. And it's an amazing... It sleeps 650 people. It's a huge yoga and meditation centre. It's coming up for its 40th anniversary, actually. And they host all kinds of personal development and self-discovery retreats and weekends. And it's the second time I hosted a Sober Curious weekend there. Last year I had 30 people, and this year I had over 60 people. So,
what do you do on your weekend?
We do lots of sharing and storytelling and diving into our booze stories. It's really for people to get... or have a space, an actual proper segment of time where they can be with other people diving into and discussing like what are the big whys behind their drinking. Because for me, that's a really key piece in making a sustainable change going forward. Until you know why you're drinking, it's harder to stop drinking. Until you know what I mean by that is until you know what you perceive alcohol is doing for you, you can't begin to replace alcohol with other behaviors, beliefs, etc., that do the same things. Does that make sense? So it's like, for me, for example, there's a why I wasn't drinking, which was to mitigate my social anxiety. So once I know that I have social anxiety, I can begin to work on how can I feel more confident in social settings? How can I change the kind of ways that I'm socializing? How can I mitigate my social anxiety so that I don't need to use alcohol in those situations? The other big why for me was, well, I was using it to relax and unwind because I work really hard and I find it really hard to switch off. So once I have that why in place, it's like, well, now I can work on proactively finding other ways to relax and unwind that aren't about reaching for a drink. Yeah. So it's that sort of work, but we make it really fun as well. We had a dance party because I also love to prove to people that they can dance sober.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's been a year since your book came out.
Just over a year, yeah.
And so sober curious is a term that I'm seeing a lot. People talk about sober curious and mindful drinking often in the same sentence.
They do.
How does that feel for you?
I'm so thrilled that this term has just kind of taken off in such a big way. You know, it's really amazing. I think that sober curious really appeals to people because it sounds quite playful and it sounds very non-judgmental, and there's so much wiggle room for each person's individual experience and each person's individual process of self-discovery within that, you know? So it's really, I'm really, really happy with the way that the term's taken off. I even told everyone who came on my retreat, you know, lots of them were like, thank you so much for this book, thank you for this work, thank you for creating this thing. And I'm like, I literally, the words just came, Goddess gave me the words for something that was already happening, right? You guys have been sober curious for years. I've just now given it terminology that means that people can talk about it kind of openly.
Does it feel weird that it's no longer yours? It's a bit like mindful drinking. We don't have any claim on it.
I know.
We may be able to trademark things like
this
festival and stuff like that.
It's like someone even came up to me at the end of the retreat and was like, how do you feel? Like, I would love to organize a meetup in my town and call it Sober Curious. Am I allowed to do that? How do you feel about that? And yeah, I trademarked the term Sober Curious, largely because everyone told me I should. But there's no way I'm going to tell people. Just like issue cease and desists around people doing sober curious meetups. It's just like, yes, there's a part of me, my ego mainly, that would like to be recognized as the creator of that term. But at the same time, if this is language that can be put around a movement that's kind of already happening and help more and more people feel attracted to the idea of questioning their drinking, then fantastic. And if I'm just the kind of custodian of that in a way, you know? It's interesting also, I'm like, all right, job done, next. Well, I'm getting a bit bored of talking about it, to be honest.
I mean, I've now been sober for, you know, 8 years, and there is a bit of the fact that I've done some of that already myself, and now I'm interested in other things. And
right.
But you've only just got started, right?
I love it. And in terms of where Sober Curious is going, it's just been really exciting to see different brands wanting to work with me and different ways that this term can be applied. Like, I love hosting the retreats, and I think that having those deep dive experiences, I can see how hugely valuable they are. So I definitely want to be doing more of that, possibly in different places around the world, giving people opportunities to come together and get curious together. But we'll see.
I mean, it's interesting to me because what you're doing is, as a writer, you're finding ways to create spaces. So your storytelling weekend is about you using your writing skills.
Yeah.
I'm an activist by background, and guess what? I've built a guide in a way that, you know, we find our own skills that we always had and applying it to a different problem.
Exactly. So mine is, I found so much value out of the perspective that we can get from writing about things. For me, the writing and the storytelling piece is really about being able to sort of zoom out and almost take this God's eye view of your own life and experiences. Once you put your stuff down on paper, your story down on paper, you can become the observer of your story rather than being caught up in the story and all of the emotions and all of the stuff that's boiling and bubbling there. And you can kind of like look objectively and with a rational, sober mind at what's been going on and put the puzzle pieces together, and from there write a new story for yourself going forward. And that's sort of what I've been able to do writing both my books. I've learned so much about my own self writing my books. It's amazing.
I love the fact that somebody said to you, why don't you write a book, and you have excitement, and somebody came to me and said, do you want to write a book? I was like, oh, fuck.
I'm like, finally, what I'm here to do.
And I'm like, oh, my God, sitting down and writing, really.
And people say to me, where's the Sober Curious community? Where are the meetups? And I'm just like, oh, no, I can't imagine like anything that would feel more draining to me, because it just doesn't come naturally to me. So I want to write more books, whether they'll be another Sober Curious book, potentially it's something I'm thinking about and speaking to various people about. So we'll see. But back to your piece about the mindful drinking. I have been known, and I agree, it's a very useful term. And for me, it means bringing this sort of, similar thing, bringing this questioning, conscious, aware mindset to your drinking. So you're not just mindlessly drinking, just blindly drinking. However, I have been known to say that I think that the term mindful drinking is almost a bit of an oxymoron. Because actually, when you're drinking, you're looking to get out of your mind and to switch your mind off. Like, any drinking is about shutting down your mind. Like, you want to shut down the thoughts a lot of the time, you know?
But being mindful is about paying attention.
Paying
so exactly
attention.
What you talked about in terms of looking at your why. And then intention. So after your why, you need to look at who is it I want to be? What's the life I want to lead?
Exactly.
And where does alcohol play a role in it? Based on all this information I've given myself.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that decision may be about just drinking less rather than going abstinent.
Mm-hmm.
And for others, it may be about picking a particular drink or even other decisions around drinking. So,
exactly.
And who am I to tell people what's the right way for them?
Exactly. And I subscribe to the same philosophy. And I am an advocate for abstinence based on my own experience of that's what really works for me. And so I will always promote that and offer people that, because we have, because outside of addiction recovery circles, we are not offered abstinence as a choice, and I think that's a really incredible choice for someone to make in their lives. Like I said, based on my own experience and based on what I've seen in other people's experience, like, why then it comes back to why do you feel you need alcohol? Like, why?
Yeah.
It reminds me of that why. It reminds me of I've got a 4.5-year-old nephew, and he's at that age where, like, there's always another why underneath any answer he gets. It's like, but why? But why? And he does it to wind his parents up.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you kind of bring back that 4.5-year-old self that will always ask another why whenever you feel like drinking might be a good idea. Why?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Ruby Warrington.
So there we go, Vinny. So if I'm an alcohol-free mindful drinker, what have you decided what you are?
Sober, curious, weekend, slightly naughty.
I don't think that's a good enough description yet. But you are quite sober, curious, because you come and try all the beers in our office all the time, and you do have quite a few alcohol-free beers in your fridge. So you're definitely in that curious space, aren't you?
Is there a term for someone that is mindful that they probably shouldn't be drinking on the weekend but does tend to drink on the weekend?
They're a drinker, Vinny. That's what that is. Oh, bless.
After all these episodes, I'm just a drinker.
But you are thinking about it a lot more now, just from finding out about the beers. And so you know that you can swap out some of your drinks. You're building some knowledge around how you might go about moderating at the weekend if you so wished. At the minute, you don't so wish, I think, is the issue.
Yeah, not massively. I would like to cut down a bit more. But I have, since I've met you, it's been weird, dear listener. Since I met Laura by happenstance, you can't edit all these podcasts and go through all these interviews without forcing yourself to think about it. And so it's been a wonderfully positive impact meeting you and cutting down drinking. I've significantly cut down drinking. And also, I question things a lot. So whereas before, I'd be on a social bash and I'd automatically have a drink. Now someone thrusts a drink in my hand and I think, well, no, I don't need to do that. So, it's been definitely positive.
I love the bit that you say there, which is, since I've met you, it's been weird. That's what most people say about meeting me. But are you gonna introduce any of these wines or this gin and tonic
into my life? Yeah, I think my girlfriend and I would be very happy with this Vintense, because she and I, particularly she, like dry drinks, and this is significantly drier than your average non-alcoholic. Actually, never mind that. It's just significantly drier than any wine, regardless of alcohol content, and that really does it for me. So
yeah, and I'm really excited about the ready-made gin and tonics in a bottle, because that makes it a lot easier than carrying a big bottle of tonic and a big bottle of one of the alcohol-free spirits if you're going to a party or you're going out or something, just to know that you've got something that's basically ready to drink. I'm very much into these highballs.
I always wonder with you, because you obviously try more of this stuff than anyone I've ever met. After having gone through bottle after bottle of non-alcoholic beer and wine and everything else, have you got anything that's a complete staple that's always in your kitchen?
I'm a big fan of kombucha. I really liked dry cider. So a kombucha, particularly like real kombucha, fits into that that very dry, scrumpy-ish taste for me. Mm. And I love making, I love really good cheddar cheese, really strong cheddar cheese. I mean, basically, I go on extremes of stuff. So a really strong cheddar cheese with a really lovely dry kombucha. And then I really do like the drinks that might have extra caffeine and stuff like that in. I mean, I have to say, you know, discovering fine loose leaf tea was an amazing thing for me. And I will still go to a party and make my own tea. Mm. So, but I fully appreciate that I'm far more ballsy about this stuff than other people. So
kombucha is extremely expensive.
No, but you come out of your party healthier.
Yeah, no, you would. You and know, also, you don't need 20 bottles.
You don't need 20 bottles. You're not going to get a kebab on the way home. You're going to enjoy your following day. Really, does it matter if it's £4 a bottle?
Very good point.
You have to. It's amazing how suddenly you become more price conscious when you're not drinking.
Yeah.
Yet when you're drinking, you'll happily put your card behind the bar and forget how much it is that you've spent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how we when you pull yourself back and have a little think and go, what? Why am I quibbling over a slightly more expensive drink that's alcohol-free that I like to drink than probably some really crap wine that I've just spent, you know, £20 a bottle on and is going to ruin my weekend? So, you know, it's about your values and the value you put on your evening out and having something nice to drink.
The other thing I've noticed in drinking sessions, not that I have so many anymore, but when I do, I invariably wake up not only having spent a lot of money on me and making myself feel worse, but quite often I buy people I don't particularly like a drink. Why am I doing that?
So where will you be hanging out this weekend, Vinny? Just for anyone who wants to know where to get a drink.
It's worth it in London. It really is. Put up with my company for a £6 beer. Worth it.
Oh, well. We'll put some more information about Highball and Vintense on the blog that goes with this on joinclubsoda.com. But otherwise, I think that's a wrap for March.
Oh, thanks very much. I really enjoyed this month. And thank you for leaving me with a couple of cheeky bottles of Vintense.
Fantastic.
We've got a massive burp coming. Should we finish the recording now?
Yeah, quick.
See you next month.
Join clubsoda.com.
This was mixed and produced in the UK by We Make Podcasts. For more information, go to wemakepodcasts.uk.